Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. Bob is out on assignment today, but today we are doing part two in our series, Blackstone and Private Equity. And joining me today is Jose Lopez, who is the San Diego director at the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, also known as ACE. Jose, welcome to the Green and Red podcast.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so we did a show with someone from the Private Equity Stakeholders Project, Jordan Ash, and got into a little bit of the policy stuff. But we just also want to talk to someone who's been like experienced with what's going on the front lines of dealing with private equity and housing. And so I guess maybe we could just kick off a little bit on with your background. And so you're the director of ACE in San Diego, but could you just tell us a little bit of your background and how you came to get that position?
Yeah, definitely. I was born here in Chula Vista. I was born and raised here, like the South Bay, South San Diego. And I joined ACE in 2015 when there was an organizer knocking on doors in my neighborhood and they were building a community chapter to fight for improvements in our neighborhood. Somebody invited me to a meeting. I went to the meeting to see what it was all about and started to get involved. For a long time, I feel like I would always talk about like the things that were going on, how we needed to do something about it, but I just didn't know how or where. And most people I talked to were like, nothing's ever going to change. Just get a job, go back to school. Don't worry about that stuff. Just worry about yourself. And then one day I got invited to this meeting and started to learn more about organizing and got together with my neighbors to fight for some improvements, more lights in our neighborhood, better parks, stop signs, street lights and all that. And we were able to form a group of 30, 40 members in our like two block radius and really put pressure on the city to get a lot of these improvements done. And so
that's like a campaign around like public works, like potholes and streetlights and things like that. Is there other work that your local group did?
Yeah. So ACE is a multi-issue organization and like we work around the issues that the members care the most about. Right. So when that chapter was being formed, it was around like those improvements in that neighborhood. But from there, we started to work on other things. We helped lead the fight for Chula Vista to become a sanctuary city back in like 2017, which is a little bit after we formed our group. So we learned about how to build power. We had enough power to win some stop signs and improvements at the park and then continued to work on other issues like immigration after Trump had gotten elected. And then from there, as we were talking to people, we started to hear from folks that their number one issue was the cost of rent, but that it was that housing was their biggest concern.
And ACE, which sort of comes out of ACORN after ACORN dissolved in 2008, 2009, whenever that was, like housing's a big issue that ACE and other groups out of the ACORN tradition work on, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And again, it just goes back to what are the issues that impact people the most, right? So like when we show up to a community and we're knocking on doors, talking to people, we ask them like, what is it that you care the most about? What is the one thing you'd like to change or what is like the biggest concern for you? And more than half the time, people talk about housing, whether it's like the rent being too expensive, the conditions that they're living in. But that definitely has been like a top priority for our members the last few years. And that's what we've focus on the campaigns that we've been focusing on.
In San Diego, I'm here in the Bay Area, which is a very expensive housing market and honestly has a very high cost of living. But San Diego is also one of the most expensive housing markets in the country as well, correct?
Yeah, I think recently the city of San Diego was named like the most expensive city in the whole country.
Wow, that's amazing. But it's amazing to think about. It just like moves around into these different California metropolitan areas, right?
Yeah. And a big reason is the lack of tenant protections down here.
Yeah. And so maybe tell me about that a little bit, because I just doing a little bit of research. I saw where y'all do a lot of work on rent control and other tenant protections. But Tell us a little bit about that. What are you fighting for? Who are you fighting? That sort of thing.
Like here in San Diego County, before like 2020, we had almost no tenant protection, right? There was no limit on rent increases. Landlords could evict tenants without telling them why. And that has changed since we helped pass the Tenant Protection Act of 2019. So now if we actually have for the first time a limit on rent increases and tenants have just cause protections. But like as soon as we passed that law, COVID happened. And we had to move from trying to let people know about these new protections that they had to figure out like, how do we keep people in their homes? So everything really changed. And for a couple of years, we're working to cancel the rent statewide and pass like a lot of eviction moratoriums. And then even then, like when we had the eviction moratoriums and people couldn't get evicted for not being able to pay their rent, we started to see a huge rise in no-fault evictions, where like landlords are evicting people to like remodel, right? Or they were like saying that they were going to move back into the property or that they didn't want to rent anymore. So they're finding all these like reasons to go around the protections and still be able to evict people based on these no fault just causes. And down here, we don't really have any, we didn't have much protections around that either. So landlords could say they were going to remodel and not remodel. Or they would say they were going to move back in and not move back in. And there was nothing we could really do about it. So we started to work in different cities to try to close those loopholes. And in the past few years have strengthened the no-fault eviction protection in Chula Vista, San Diego, and just recently in the city of Imperial Beach. We're making some progress. In 2018, like before all this, right? Like in 2018, we tried to move rent control in National City. It was like the first campaign that I did as an organizer. And mm-hmm. as I was talking to people about the neighborhood improvement, some people were like, yeah, that's important. But what good is it for the improvements to happen if I'm not going to be able to afford to live here next year because the rent just keeps going up? Or some people were like, I don't even want to see improvements in my neighborhood because more improvements to me is going to mean more rent increases. So we started to see if we could move rent control through the city council in the city of National City. There was not enough support there. So our members decided to do a ballot initiative. And so we collected signatures and put rent control on the ballot. And we almost passed the first rent control policy in San Diego County. But unfortunately, we lost by 155 votes. And this was because the opposition was able to spend 10 times what we were able to afford, right? So our campaign was like $60,000. The opposition flooded the National City with $650,000. And that's how they were able to beat us. So it's been just like a constant struggle to pass these policies down here.
And the opposition's going to be like developers and landlord associations and
yeah, things exactly. Like that. The California Apartment Association, the Southern California Rental Housing Association, and just like landlords from all throughout. There's donations coming in from like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, to this little town, National City, just because they didn't want to see rent control happen here.
There was a, I lived in San Francisco for a long time. We had, the whole time I lived in San Francisco, we had rent control. But I remember a friend of mine who was actually an organizer went to a meeting of some like high-end Democratic club in Pacific Heights, which is like the Beverly Hills of San Francisco, and was making actually an argument around rent control and rent protections and things like that. And one of the people at the meeting just went off on him and said, this is socialism. What you want is socialism. We're going to destroy you. And that's how I imagine, especially in California, which is supposed to be like this liberal state, is I imagine that's how these like old rich white people who probably gave money to Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, but like they want to protect what's theirs and protect the value of their property.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big issue, right? People valuing like private property over like people having a place to live.
And so what is the current status of rent control in some of these areas? Is there rent control at all in down there in Southern California, in San Diego area?
Not in San Diego, right? Not other than the statewide rent control law so no one I think is even close. Like at this point, I think the city where we might be able to pass a rent control policy is going to have to be National City again. Since 2018, we've been able to help get a few people elected onto the city council, where like now we have more of a majority there and we might have enough support to get something passed through the city council. We also are just like just finished an organizing drive in National City. So we have a brand new chapter that has formed around this issue of rent control and like stronger tenant protections. And it's like a very powerful group that is coming together. So I have a feeling that with this strong group of members and like the favorable conditions in the city council, we might be able to pass rent control, hopefully in the next year or so, or hopefully sooner, but we're on that route.
And what is the organizing looking like for that? Is that going to be another ballot initiative?
No. So luckily, because we feel we have enough support through the city council, we're going to see if we can get one of the council members to champion a rent control ordinance. Because all we would need in National City is 3 votes in favor of rent control. It's a small council of 5 people.
So with this sort of, with it, San Diego being the most expensive place to live in the country, and there's this affordable housing crisis, right? And it seems like a lot of politicians are really, politicians on the left, or the progressive left, I'm thinking like Zohran Mamdani and Omar Fetteh in Minneapolis, they're really jumping on this notion of affordability. And so what, without rent control, without housing, tenant protections, and yet we're in a very expensive market, what does it look like on the ground? Not having like stable housing, affordable housing, how's that affecting people?
I think every year people are getting really high rent increases, right? Like people are struggling as of now to afford to pay the rent. And they're just like stressing out every year waiting for like the next rent increase. Like right now, like the average rent for a 2-bedroom in San Diego is almost $3,000 a month. And if you get a 10% rent increase, that's almost a $300 rent increase. And then like the other issue that might even be a bigger issue is like the no-fault evictions for remodeling. So there's been like a huge rise in investors coming in and buying older properties and kicking everybody out with the excuse that they're going to make substantial repairs.
Right.
So a lot of the times these people are living there in not the best conditions. Then finally somebody comes that wants to fix those, make their apartments better. But not for them, right? They want to make it better for someone who can pay twice as much. And it's like really sad because in a lot of those cases, it's like older buildings where like the tenants are like very long-term tenants. They've lived there 10, 20, 30 years. They might've had a good landlord, one of those mom and pop landlords that like might not raise the rent all the time, that actually has like relationships with their tenants. And then all of a sudden that person gets old, they pass away and they sell to the developer or a corporation. And they come in with this like profit incentive, right? And they're like, dang, these people pay half what the market is charging. Let me get them out of here, make a few repairs, and then I'll start to charge twice as much.
And that's where companies like Blackstone come in, right?
Yeah, Blackstone, definitely. But then also just like regular, like smaller investors that are just coming in and taking advantage of the lack of protections. Just this year, there was 2 apartment complexes in the city of Imperial Beach, and one of them was 52 units. The other one was 64 units. They're right next to each other. A lot of seniors, a lot of single parents, small children, folks with disabilities. And all of a sudden, like the landlord sold the properties. 2 different investment companies came in and told everybody they had to move. So 110 units were just displaced. Just because the landlord wanted to make some repairs.
And those people are out on the street, or they have to go move a family or move away where it's cheaper. I also know there's this phenomenon of what they call extended stay hotels, where lots of people go when they're evicted, at least in other parts of the country. And Blackstone's a big investor in some of the biggest extended stay hotel chains too, is what I've read.
Yeah, it just depends. Some people are more fortunate than others. Some people have family members where they can stay with for a while. Other people had to move from the city. Some people move from the state. Right now, since we're so close to the border, a lot of people move down to Mexico. We live in Tijuana. Mm-hmm. Or I like to joke around, sometimes they go to worse places like Texas or Arizona. But yeah, because there's this once, like for example, we had members who were paying like $1,800 a month for a 2-bedroom. And then all of a sudden they're like looking for a new place and everywhere is like close to $3,000. And then just to move to this new place, like you got to have good credit. You got to have the first month, the last month for the deposit.
Probably no pets, just, right?
Yeah, you have to navigate all those different things. Folks who are seniors, like, oh, they need help moving. just a really big hardship for most folks.
Just to pivot to Blackstone, to segue to Blackstone a little bit, like how is Blackstone involved with this housing crisis in San Diego County, the parts of Southern California?
Like during the pandemic in 2021, Blackstone bought 66 apartment complexes in San Diego County.
66? Where like,
66 apartments. I think it was like close to 6,000 people who lived in these apartments. The majority of them, like low-income apartments, some of the few remaining like naturally affordable apartments. And then as soon as they took over, we started to see people moving out, right? Like they just have this model of where they don't make repairs, right? They like treat people bad. Like they basically do everything they can to like get people to like just get fed up and like move, right? Because they know as soon as this person leaves, this person who's been paying like below market, they're able to get them, bring in a new tenant that can pay twice as much. Like in the last few years, we've seen the rents at these apartments that were bought by Blackstone go up anywhere from 50 to 70% in just a few years. And the statewide rent cap, right, says it's no more than 10% a year. But like when people who are paying below market get evicted or move out, and then you bring the apartments to the market rate, like you're like easily doubling the rent. And then another.
I was just going to say, and then working people who had been living there can't afford to live with that type of that higher rent.
Yeah, exactly. So every year they're expecting like a large rent increase. And like in between, like the repairs are being neglected. People are being like intimidated, harassed. They're just making things really challenging for folks. And then as soon as they can get them out, they'll get them out in order to rent to somebody new that's going to pay a lot more. Luckily, they haven't been doing like the no-fault evictions, but like they are like trying to get people out as soon as possible. And like the other big thing, obviously, that Blackstone plays a huge role is like how they spend their money, right? Giving money to like the California Apartment Association, right? The Southern California Rental Housing Association, the money they use to support elected officials that don't support rent control, or all the money that they put down to fight like these statewide rent control initiatives. Or actually, I wouldn't say rent control. I would say like fighting like the repeal of Costa-Hawkins.
And there's no accountability for Blackstone. It's not like there's some state regulator who state regulating agency, which comes in and tries to have any kind of control over what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't believe so. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to go like to their investors, to like pension funds that are invested in Blackstone, to share our members' stories, try to put pressure that way. And we have had some luck with that. When we first started to organize like the Blackstone Tenants Union, we were able to get a meeting with Blackstone after a series of actions, like showing up to different like pension fund meetings. We did get a meeting with a high up executive from Blackstone, and they did make commitments to like make the repairs that our members were asking for. Because like for most of the people that we talked to would tell us that like repairs would take months or they would never get done. And once we made this agreement with them, they committed to making the repairs within 2 weeks of the tenants requesting them. And they did do a pretty good job for the most part, like making those repairs. But other than that, like we had asked them to commit to not raising the rents more than 3%. They were not willing to do that. We asked them to not do any no-fault evictions. They also did not commit to doing that either. The only thing that they did say that they were going to do is make the repairs, which is like their job to do anyways.
Right. And so obviously ACE is doing a lot of pushback. Are there other organizations or community groups which are fighting Blackstone in Southern California or even San Diego County? Or unions? Is labor involved in this?
We've worked with labor a few times. Like one of the pension fund meetings that we went to was for the San Diego Employees Retirement Association, which is like the pension fund for SEIU 221 members. And we were able to have, the president of SEIU 221 speak at the pension fund meeting with a few of our members. We also had help from like our national affiliate, which is the Center for Popular Democracy, who helped out to send emails and calls to the pension fund. Also, we've worked very closely with AFSCME 3299 because the University of California is also like a big investor of Blackstone.
That was actually one of my next questions.
Yeah, we've been working with them to try to get the UC to divest or stop investing in Blackstone as well. So yeah, those are a few folks. And I think the like DSA here in San Diego has this thing called the Tenant Council of San Diego, and they've done some work at a couple of Blackstone buildings that I'm aware of.
That's great. The back to UC, didn't UC has some sort of arrangement with Blackstone where Blackstone actually owns a good bit of student housing in the state with the University of California, through the University of California, is that right?
Yeah, I think recently they took over a company that does like luxury student housing.
Yeah, okay. And then my last question is, with all of these acquisitions by Blackstone, because I also just like with my in my last conversation with Jordan Ash from the Private Equity Shareholders Project, it looked like Blackstone in the last few years, probably since right before the pandemic, but even going back as far as like the financial crisis in 08, has a lot of private equity, but includes led by Blackstone. I think it's the largest one that does this. They're buying up lots of property and they're doing a lot all over the country, what you're talking about. What is the sort of bigger impact that you're seeing on the street or on the ground in San Diego? Similar to what my other question was, but how are you seeing people being affected by what Blackstone is doing?
Well, I think they're like setting like a model for all the other landlords, right? So like if you're like a small landlord and then like across the street, there's an apartment complex that's charging twice as much as you are, they're charging $3,000. Like, why aren't I? Right. And like they start to raise the rents. And also like recently there was like this whole RealPage scandal where like all these companies were using like an algorithmic software to like figure out like what's the most rent that they can charge.
What the market rate is, right?
Yeah. So they're basically setting the market. And like Blackstone, I don't think was directly named in the lawsuit, but one of the companies that works for Blackstone, which is FPI Management, it's the management company that runs all the buildings here in San Diego for Blackstone. They were one of the people in the lawsuit, or one of the management companies in the lawsuit that was using that software. So there are a lot of times people are like, we got to let the market decide, right? Supply and demand. But in this case, it's not that simple, right? Not when you have these huge corporations like controlling the market.
They know how to game the algorithm too, right? So that it can punch up the market rate. They're also like for a mom and pop landlord too, that's going to affect them. It's like now they have to also charge them what's the market rate.
Mm-hmm.
I do have one other question, which is not related to housing, which is before you actually talked about ACE also worked on immigration. And we talked with an ACE director, Astarto, in LA about what was going on in LA around ICE. I'm wondering if in San Diego you're seeing also the surge of ICE activity the way they happen in Los Angeles.
We have seen definitely like a rise in like all this ICE activity. Definitely not as much as Los Angeles, but we are seeing folks getting picked up. Just a few weeks ago, we had like several parents like on their way to drop off their kids from school get picked up by ICE.
And that includes ACE members. Right on.
Yeah. And I think people are just really concerned about like just being out there doing their normal things.
Yeah. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of that in the Bay Area here too. I'm going to let you go there. Work time. Folks, we've been talking with Jose Lopez, who's the San Diego director at ACE, Alliance for Californians for Community Empowerment. If you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, give us a subscription. If you're listening to this on an audio platform, give us a rate and review. And then if you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org and hit that support button. Or check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And if folks want to find out more about ACE, where should they go, Jose?
They can go to our website at aceaction.org. And then we also have Facebook, Instagram.
Okay, awesome. It's been great talking with you today. And hopefully maybe we'll check in again sometime soon in the future. Everyone else out there, make trouble and misbehave, and we'll talk to you again soon.